2020 is now in the rearview mirror, and 2021 is through the windshield. We're looking at the best stories of 2020. This is the third in a three-part series on the year that was. I'm Dan. I'm with Ben. We are the Teaching Pastors of Life Fellowship in Charlotte. This is Life Talks, and we are discussing the major stories of 2020. Ben? We have just gone on and on about these, and we're not even done with our
list. I think we're playing one episode, and it's turned into three.
Yeah, yeah. So this one, you know, we're going to start off by talking about, and, you know, I hate talking about it, but there were a lot of major evangelical leaders who just flat out messed up.
Yeah.
Disappointed. And that's not unusual, you know.
It happens every year, but I think—
this was a bad year.
It was a bad year for a lot of reasons, but it was— I don't know. I think every year there's going to be a name or a couple names where you hear their names and you think, and they're more some kind of moral or leadership failure, and you're going to think, oh no, not them, you know. Mm. But the big four that I think of, Carl Lentz, who is the pastor of Hillsong Church in New York City. Yep. You have Jerry Falwell Jr., who is the president of Liberty University.
Who I do want to distinguish is not a pastor, never claimed to be
a
pastor.
No,
he's an attorney, so it shouldn't surprise any of us, right?
Right.
So I just made all the attorneys mad. Sorry about that. No, but he definitely evangelical front place. Yeah.
There's a moral failure with him. You have Ravi Zacharias, who, you know, a lot of things have come out since his death.
Yeah, there's a post-mortem scandal.
And then John Ortberg. John Ortberg who was a pastor who was almost like this conscious voice of reason for people who had been abused by the church, come find out that he allowed his son, who had various sexual issues, to volunteer at their church and you know, work with children. I mean, yeah.
And those are the big ones. I mean, everybody from, McDonald
from James McDonald.
I mean, it started in 2019, but it's continued to go on. And there's Loritz, who had a similar situation with Ortberg and his church, and this kind of brings up, there is now a social media presence for people intent on holding evangelical leaders accountable. There was the professor at Cedarville University that almost brought down the president there. Mm-hmm. And you look back to the Me Too movement, nailed it for quite a few. But Julie Royce, who is a journalist out of Chicago, gained her fame exposing a lot of the issues with McDonald, but she used to be a reporter for World Magazine, and now she has her own kind of accountability website where she's an investigative reporter. She goes after these folks and she exposes them, and it is shining the light in some corners of evangelicalism that are very uncomfortably disgusting.
And I think, absolutely, whenever we talk about these, it's sad. We do not want to trample on anyone's name or you and I are not coming across as holier than thou.
No, this is a matter of public record.
Because, but by the grace of God, you know, we're all human beings. But I think any time prominent voices, leaders, figures have a moral failing at some level, whether it's their judgment, whether it's their character, whether it's, you know, a sin issue, it's something that awakens the church and should awaken all of us to realize we must be followers of Jesus before men. Mm. And if we choose to follow people, no matter how gifted or charismatic or brilliant they are, we will be left disappointed if we do not have our— I love that passage in Hebrews 12, let us fix our eyes on Jesus. And every year we are reminded that we must do that, because if we fix our eyes on man, again, no matter how gifted they are, no matter how much they've impacted us, we're going to be disappointed. And you and I have been disappointed many times, and it's going to continue to happen. We pray that it doesn't. We pray that we stop seeing this, but the reality is this is an ongoing problem.
Let's just pause here for just a moment and say, let's just assume, you know, I'm Joe Church, member of, you know, XYZ Church, Paducah. And I'm watching all this, and I'm pretty disgusted, quite frankly. I'm saying, these guys are supposed to be our spiritual leaders, and they're behaving in ways that I don't behave. Mm-hmm. How am I supposed to trust my pastor? What do you say to somebody who really has become disillusioned by these very public failures of people who are supposed to be spiritual leaders?
I think
beyond, I know the idea is, they're fallen men,
yeah,
and keep your eyes on Jesus. I understand that, but Is there any way to contextualize the uniqueness that comes when a pastor posts?
Yeah, I think one of the things you have to remember is that there's always going to be, we did a series on spiritual warfare. There's always going to be a greater attack from the enemy on spiritual leaders than there are on, you know, it's kind of like the way terrorists work. Terrorists, you know, there used to be rules of engagement when armies would fight each other. Mm-hmm. But guerrilla warfare and terrorists would say, you know, you find the general, you find the leader, and you pick them off so that, you know, you didn't do that. There was rules of engagement. Well, Satan doesn't fight fair. He fights dirty. And what he does is when anyone has any kind of spiritual leadership position who has influence over, you know, myriads of people, they're going to have a greater target on their back. So at one level, there is a spiritual battle that is intensified when you are in a spiritual leadership role. Hmm. Okay. You and I would agree.
We've experienced
that. And that there's a reason why 80% of the people that start out in ministry, pastoral ministry, do not retire in pastoral ministry. Mm. Because of whether it's moral failings or just exhaustion of dealing with the spiritual warfare issue and a myriad of other issues. Mm-hmm. That's just the reality. So I think we need to be very gracious. We need to be very kind. We need to remember that. I think the thing that you also need to be thinking about is there always needs to be a sense of accountability and structure in place so that if there is some, most of these men, you would say there was a lack of accountability. Mm-hmm. There's no one caring for their soul. There was no one that was checking in on them, and whether they submitted to it or it just wasn't there. But I think that's a wake-up call for all leaders and for all people to say there needs to be accountability. And man, if Joe Schmo is sitting there saying, I have a disillusionment, pray for leadership.
Yeah. The other thing I would just simply say is be very, very cautious about latching on to celebrity.
Yeah.
Whether you are a pastor seeking celebrity or whether you are, you know, just a mainstream believer who's looking at a guy with, you know, a lot of books or a lot of letters behind his name or a big crowd that hears him. Remember that celebrity creates things in all of us that are not healthy, that are not dangerous. If you have a narcissistic bent, it feeds it. If you have a pride issue, it builds. If even if you're the most humble guy in the world, it is very easy once you taste the bitter cup of celebrity to become feeling entitled, feeling special. Mm-hmm. And I think those are important things. We don't need to feed that in each other.
No.
And we don't need to seek that as people in the ministry.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
All right. Well, we buzzed through that one. We spent more time on it than intended. Another one you had brought up was just the idea of Amy Comey Barrett and the judges and the changing face of the American judiciary.
It was definitely one of the bigger stories, I think, because one of the reasons why a lot of evangelicals held their nose and voted for Trump in 2016 was the issue of the Supreme Court. I mean, it's not a secret. There's a lot of people that had major issues with the character of Donald Trump and his personality, so to speak. And yet they realized, well, if he votes or if he puts in justices in the Supreme Court that are more friendly to religious freedom, then it's worth the vote. And let's just be honest, Donald Trump, you know, in 4 years put three justices on the Supreme Court, which is pretty good number considering the most two-term presidents only put two. So, I mean...
And I would say this, too, because everybody wants to give Trump credit for this. And ultimately, Trump does get credit because he's the one who signs the nominations.
Right.
But because I have a friend who is appointed to a federal judgeship, I know a little bit about behind the scenes. And I also know that, first of all, the vice president's office, and he's a devout evangelical, mm-hmm. has been very influential. And I don't think it's any coincidence that he comes from the Indiana and so does Amy Comey Barrett. Mm. But the other thing, too, is there is one of Clarence Thomas's former law clerks is kind of like the gatekeeper in the White House for judgeships. Mm. And she's working very closely with you know, the Federal Society and other conservative groups on bringing these in. The legacy beyond the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is huge because we got the Scalia seat with a Kennedy seat and the Ginsburg seat all shifted in 4 years. Mm-hmm. Very rare in one term does anybody ever do three nominations. But there are 300 judgeships further down that Trump has appointed, and those are going to ripple through through the judiciary and public life for decades to come. And a lot of credit needs to be given to Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, because he basically made this his number one mission over the last 4 years. And I do think that there are protections provided for people of faith in particular. We at least have a 5-4, because I don't think you can trust John Roberts anymore. But I think we have a 5-4 majority on those things. You know, here's one just kind of cynical observation is, I just wonder if it would be possible for an evangelical to ever be approved by the Senate today.
Probably not.
Yeah, we've got six Catholics.
Yeah.
And it'll just be very interesting to just, you know, what would happen if an evangelical actually got nominated.
Yeah.
And there are some evangelicals that, you know, they've risen through the ranks. They're good people, but it'd just be interesting to me.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
there. All right. So what's another area that you feel like?
I think another big deal was the Abraham Accords. And again, I don't think this hit mainstream media a lot, but what the, again, we are not saying anything political here, but the reality is that what President Trump was able to do, and I know he wasn't directly involved with negotiations. I think his son-in-law was, but
Jared Kushner, but
yeah.
And Mike Pompeo, I think also.
Yes. But the idea of the nation of Israel, the Jewish state, normalizing relations with, I believe, four
and possibly two more coming along.
But Muslim majority countries is unheard of. It's huge.
This is what irritates me about the media today. Any other president, for instance, there'd be no question about whether or not he got the Nobel Peace Prize. Mm-hmm. No question at all. And most people know I'm not a Trump fan.
Yeah,
I'm
know.
Not a Trumpster.
Yeah, right.
But you got to give credit to where credit is due. This is huge.
It's huge.
Sorry about that. But it is. This is just, people would not have thought it possible 4 years ago.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating when you think about how much conflict and war in. I mean, part of the UAE and Bahrain agreements with Israel was what they believe is a precursor to Saudi Arabia. If Saudi Arabia signs a normalizing relations with the state of Israel, man, it's going to really have a ripple effect of possible peace of it, you know, that in a lot of it, if we're not going to make this a podcast on global politics, but the reality is it's pretty much everyone versus Iran at this point. And I think that's the, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And I think that's a lot of the posturing is going
100%.
On.
You are at the linchpin of all of this.
Yeah.
This is an alignment and we need to pay attention to it. It looks to me like these nations are aligning with Israel against a future threat
right.
that they see coming with a nuclear powered Iraq.
Yes.
Iran.
Yeah.
And here's the missing element that I find very interesting, which we're going to segue into another thing. Usually the United States played that key protector role. And it looks like it's shifting to, they're aligning with Israel because they know Israel has nuclear bombs mm-hmm. and they're afraid to use them.
Right.
And we see a diminishment because we're no longer as oil dependent on the Middle East.
Right.
We're seeing a diminishment of the United States being over there as the chief protector of basically our oil supply against, you know, the renegades in Iran. Where might then the American attention be forced to focus in the future? And there are a lot of implications, if you watch this, that our national attention is moving away from the Middle East. It's moving away from Europe. And it is moving toward China.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have to watch out what's going over in China, in the China Sea, or near Taiwan, the bases that are being built.
Yeah.
There are some things going on over there that we need to be paying close attention to. Here's another factor, which kind of takes us to another one of those big stories, is the Chinese Communist government is declaring open war on every religion under their... They are becoming a purer communist state.
Yeah.
And so whether it's the Muslim Uyghurs or whether it is Christian pastors, these people are not only being intimidated, they're being imprisoned. They're being put in camps. You can see the pictures of them. And right now, going on right now...
There's forced sterilization. I mean, there's the human rights atrocities being perpetrated by the country of by the China, and, you know, communist government.
We Americans are tolerating it because we want cheap junk to buy at Walmart.
You're right.
Yeah, it is right. Absolutely what's going on.
Yeah.
And because we are so dependent on buying cheap stuff from Walmart that is made in China and all the other things, because that's why everything's cheap here, is because yeah. they're making it with slave labor and they're building their economy on us, and they're buying our debt, and they're buying our businesses and our real estates like crazy, and Canada as well.
Yeah.
But we need to, there are tens of thousands of pastors right now, this is happening right now in the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, are going underground because they're coming after the pastors to arrest them.
There's a massive, I just read an article about this last week, how the aggressive assault on Christian leadership in the country of China is heating up like it hasn't done in decades. And so we need to be praying for our brothers and sisters in Christ that are over there and understand that, you know, the influence that China wants to have is not just purely amongst themselves. They want to influence our nation in many ways. I don't think we're even aware of the ways they want to influence us. But when you see, and this is a story, you know, six to 8 months ago, but when NBA players are afraid to come out against China for human rights violations in Hong Kong, and you're thinking, what is going on here? Yeah. I mean, it's
they're actively censoring Disney movies on Disney's behalf.
Yes, yes.
And who is one of the leading possible candidates to be the ambassador to China? But the guy who used to be the chairman and CEO of Disney Corporation.
Yeah.
Watch China. It's a big emerging story.
Absolutely.
But particularly for people of faith.
Yeah. Which, speaking of censorship, you just mentioned it. I think the last story do we have two stories to go or just
depends
one?
Depends how much time we have left.
The story of the social media censorship, the reality, you know, Twitter and Facebook, and I can't remember Instagram. But
that's not really, they're not censoring that.
But the whole idea is they went on Capitol Hill because of the censorship that was going on amongst social media groups.
Google
was the other one. But the reality is, just because you want to share something or like something, it does not mean it will show up anywhere. And that's the reality of what we're seeing is certain viewpoints are deemed not acceptable.
Right.
And these social media platforms. And so it's a real problem.
It's a dilemma. And, you know, the first response was, we're all going to go to
Parler
and it's we something or other. But there's two problems with that. First of all, everybody ran over there and said nothing. Mm-hmm. and the second is, then you're talking in a conservative vacuum.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. I don't want to listen to just, you know, some more of the same.
Echo chambers don't help anybody.
Nobody. I enjoy a good, robust dialogue of opposing views on that. But I, you know, the censorship is real. And it is, the problem is not only is it really occurring, it's lopsided.
Yes.
And that's what's ticking a lot of the conservatives off. And there's probably going to be a couple of responses from the government. I don't know if under a Biden administration, but the potential longer term there is that, you know, they're going to break up these mega media companies. And they probably should. They've become way too powerful. But then there's also going to be elimination of some protections, I think, for them. Because if you're going to operate this way, you're not entitled to some of the current freedoms and protections they have against liability.
Yeah, I think what I've always taken for granted, and I'm sure you have had as well, is this belief that the First Amendment, the freedom of speech, is what makes us a great country.
Yeah.
And that is coming under assault that like we've never seen before.
Right. And here's the important thing to remember is this. If the freedom of speech does not protect obnoxious speech, if it does not protect uncomfortable speech, then why have it?
Yeah.
There is no need for it.
Yeah.
The fact is that all speech has the potential to make somebody else uncomfortable.
Right.
And when you determine that some speech is acceptable, I don't even like a lot of the speech that's absolutely free. I don't, you know, I don't like the vulgarities and the cursing and the and pornography actually comes underneath the First Amendment. I don't like any of that. However, if that's the price that must be paid so that we don't have to have speech controlled, then it's, you know, it's a deal with the devil that we've accepted and it has worked for America for a couple hundred years.
Yes. So I think being aware of how the implications of speech and religious freedom on these media platforms is something we're going to have to look in the future. Anything else? We got about 2 minutes left.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, real quickly, I would just add to the list. I think the ongoing decline of liberal mainstream Protestants is something that keep your eye on, whether it's the Methodists, the Episcopalians, the Presbyterians. These denominations are in the process of imploding and going
disappearing.
To disappear. Yeah, going to disappear.
They said, I can't remember how many years, but they're saying the Episcopal denomination is on a time clock.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
There's a new Anglican denomination that's coming up that's the American Anglicans. It's affiliated with the African Anglicans, and they're going to be more of a conservative, traditional voice. But the Episcopal Church in America, as it once was, part of the Church of England, is very rapidly disappearing. And you're going to see that United Methodist denomination is
they're splitting up. Yeah,
Presbyterians split so many times they're like Baptists. You know? So all of that is coming. I think that's significant.
And I think it's because, Dan, most younger people, if you're going to be liberal and throw out all the supernatural and the truth and God, then what's the point of it? I think that the Christian or the moralized view of Christianity, Jesus without the cross and all the blood and all the rules, the younger generation is just saying, then why even go?
No kidding.
And so I think that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah. I think along with another just real quick topic would be the mental health of people in ministry.
Mm.
We saw a lot of high profile suicides this year, unusually so. And I think because of the pressure of COVID and the culture and all these different things, this is not a good year coming up for mental health. Yeah. I'm seeing research that shows there's a lot of pastors going to be resigning in the next 12 months because they're absolutely exhausted. So I see that. I also see the continued rise of the nuns, people who say, I have no religious beliefs or no affiliations. I think that number is going to continue to grow. I also think there'll eventually be a resurgence, a revival of sorts that breaks out for that. Then the final thing is, I think there's going to be a significant change in educational delivery that is partly born out of the COVID crisis, because people are learning how to learn remotely. And while it is not optimum, it has become very convenient, particularly less so for elementary day schools, but more so for graduate schools and to some extent colleges. And it's going to, the coming debt crisis, the rapid move toward virtual learning, I think there's coming a day of reckoning for higher education that's going to be pretty significant because of the amount of debt that has accrued and because of the expense of it ongoing. So I think all those are things, and they will impact Christians.
Lots of stuff. I mean, this has been a great episode. I think the reality is there's a lot of stories we missed, but With these three episodes, I think the thing that we're saying to people is be aware of what's going on, be aware of your world, be aware of the issues that are going to impact you. Maybe it's not today, but down the road, these are all issues that we're going to have to navigate.
Yeah. Be aware of your world and be aware of the world that isn't your world.
Yeah.
Because, one of the ways that we will be effective in taking salt and light is to invade enemy territory.
Mm.
And if you're only, if you're stewing in a, in a vat of your own, intellectual conversations that never has any challenge to them, you're going to be ill-prepared to give an answer for the hope that lies within you and to be able to present salt and light to the rest of the world. So I don't know what your list would have included. I hope maybe, you'll dialogue with each other, dialogue with us if you want about different things that you feel like we missed or could have addressed. But we're looking forward to 2021. We've got a whole new series of podcasts we can't wait to share with you. So thank you for joining us. Please share and tell others about us and let others know about the conversations that occur right here on Life Talks. Thanks again for listening.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.